The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Day 7 in South Africa. Could it be any more exciting? In Polokwane, it's Everybody Hates Raymond as Dominic's France get beat by a team, the irony, in Emerald. Elsewhere, FIFA agreed to look again at the Jabalani ball after Greece score World Cup goals with it. And some teams come to park the bus, others to boss the parks, and Chose and Young, as Argentina booked their passage almost to the second round with a big, big win against South Korea. We round up all of Thursday's news and action. Enjoy your post and preview a big, big Friday of matches. Germany against Serbia, Group C leaders Slovenia against the US of A, and England against Algeria. After playing like number twos, will Green still be number one? Find out in tonight's World Cup Daily. Hello, world. With me today, Amy Lawrence.
Hello.
Hi, Amy. Good to have you back.
Great to be here.
Lovely. Greg Ruffley.
Hi, James.
Greg, we don't see enough of you here in near Earth orbit, but delighted to have you on a very momentous day in South Africa 2010. And like Fabio Capello, we've brought Barry back. It's quite topical, that, because there's a business with Gareth Barry in the midfield. Barry, and lovely to see you again.
Lovely to be here.
And you've brought beer as well.
Yeah.
That's right, listeners.
We're drunk.
Hey, indeed. How about the World Cup, eh? It's like someone flipped a switch and the whole thing's just caught fire.
I can't remember the last time I enjoyed a day this much in the World Cup. Probably when Ireland beat Italy in USA 94. And I don't really remember much about that because I was just embarking on my drinking career around then. But it was fantastic. Three exciting games. People have been obviously complaining that the World Cup wasn't up to much. And you can see where they were coming from because some of the games were extraordinarily dull. Three games today were all fantastic.
Well, a fairly one-sided affair, it proved, the final game of Thursday. But one of the most enjoyed, I would wager, worldwide, as France suffered a hammer blow in their hopes of staying in this year's tournament at the hands of Mexico. 2-0 the score in Polokwane. Mexico looked fantastic, scoring goals, looking composed at the back. Barry, you were doing minute by minute. Your thoughts?
My thoughts were that France did okay in the first half, did quite well and possibly bossed possession but just didn't do anything with it. The second half, they just downed tools and gave up. Most of their players didn't try a leg. I think the only one who was really making an effort was Florent Malouda, and I suspect that was out of spite because he finally got picked to play in his favourite position, you know, in the front bank of three on the left instead of the middle bank of three in the centre. The rest of them were very, very poor. Govu, who only Dominic wanted in the team, the rest of the players didn't, was anonymous and eventually got hauled off. Toulalan did nothing. Henri didn't do anything either because he never got to come on. His Dominic continued, just, you know, refused to put him on. I don't think Dominic even used all three of his substitutes, although I could be wrong. I think he only used two.
Amy?
Well, that would be about right for Dominic because he's plainly mad. I mean, how he's kept his position, even really from when he was appointed, it was quite baffling that he'd kept his position between turning up for interview and actually taking charge of the first game. I mean, I don't think there's ever been a more unpopular coach who's the nation's most qualified in terms of amount of games they've presided over. As he, it's absolutely unbelievable. He really has this capacity to wind people up that is unrivaled in world football.
It's an interesting thing. And there's so much to say about the nature of France's performance tonight. We'll come on back onto it in a second. I just want to talk a little bit about Mexico because, you know, terrific performance. People said they're very lively, but they can't score goals. But my goodness, they can. Javier Hernandez, 4 goals now in his last 5 international appearances. He looks like a really smart signing for United, eh?
Doesn't he just? No, I mean, it's great. I think Mexico have been rather like Chile, rather like a lot of the nations from that part of the world, from South America and the Americas, have been the ones to spark first, if you like, in this World Cup. And with the exception of probably Germany, who had a good start from the off, the European teams have been either slow burners or they haven't quite got going at all. Whereas it's definitely been the exciting football has come from the more Latin countries.
Mm. Back to Dominic then, yes, and his madness. It's funny though, because can you imagine turning up to a place? I mean, as you say, he winds everybody up. The players clearly can't stand him.
I mean, this is a guy who, in the last few France games in France leading up to this competition, the entire audience of 80,000 at the Stade de France was singing, "Dominic, quit, Dominic, quit." I mean, it's highly embarrassing when you're actually off to a World Cup, or even in the games when they, you know, they were trying to qualify in the playoff. The kind of anti-Dominic feeling was absolutely huge.
And the players as well tonight,
this
evidently.
Is it. The players, you'll be hard-pressed to think of many examples of teams who play less for their manager than that. And the Federation have really sat on their hands here because they knew they've had a problem for a long time, and they've just, the elephant in the room has been called Raymond Dominic, and everybody's decided not to talk about it within the Federation. Everybody in the entire rest of France knows that it's a disaster waiting to happen. And if you spoke to anybody in France in advance of this tournament, there was such pessimism, and people basically, their aspiration was not to be embarrassed and to just about get out the group. Now, it looks like that's not even going to happen. So it's really an unmitigated disaster, and the only good thing to come out of it of France is there's a real blank canvas and a fresh slate for when Laurent Blanc comes in, and there are good players to work with. And that team, if you can just imagine that team being managed by a number of other French coaches, be it Laurent Blanc, Didier Deschamps, Claude Puel, Gerard Houllier, if you like, Arsène Wenger, anybody would have got at least anything between 20% and 80% more out of that group of players.
If I can just don my green felt hat and wave my knobbly stick in the air, I still think the French players are a disgrace to themselves and to their country for throwing in the towel like that, or waving the white flag, as it were.
Unusual for a French
player. Yeah, well, we've had this discussed this in the pod before. It's so unlike them to wave the white flag.
But what did they do? For anyone who didn't see the game, how did this this dissent manifest itself?
But they just didn't try. I mean, for the Mexico's second goal, I think Barrero picked up the ball on the right wing, just sauntered past Evra. Evra didn't even attempt to take the ball from him. They're in the process leaving Abidal exposed, and Abidal went in with sort of an unnecessary lunge to concede the penalty, which Wiley old Blanco scored. But just their demeanour.
I love the bit they were all clustered together, whispering and grumbling amongst themselves while Dominic stood there, yeah, rooted to the spot.
You know, they qualified at Ireland's expense. There's obviously, you know, no guarantee Ireland would have qualified if that goal hadn't gone in. But they qualified at Ireland's expense, and now they've come to the World Cup, and it's like they don't want to be here. Mm. So that's, you know, going to rankle with people in Ireland. And also, that, you know, at the end of the game, the subs were all congregated down behind one goal, none of them near the dugout. Dominic was just leaning against the side of the dugout with his vacant expression on his face, not giving instructions or anything. I don't understand why the players couldn't have just decided amongst themselves, you know, yesterday, look, let's just ignore him, pretend he doesn't exist, and go and do well ourselves. And, you know, appoint someone.
Well, there are major factions within the team as well. There was this business of Gorka skipping his morning croissant because he'd been ostracised by, which is a major step, obviously, in the French team, but ostracised by Ribéry and Anelka, who had their own little clique going on. Sorry, Greg, you were attempting to get a word in edgewise.
I was only going to say one thing, and that's that the only Frenchman in form today was Higuain, and he plays for Argentina.
Oof. Yeah, indeed. Well, after that second group of games then in Group A, Uruguay and Mexico are tied on 4 points. Uruguay, though, with a slightly better goal difference. France then on 1 point, South Africa on 1 point. This means that Uruguay and Mexico, who face each other in the final game, could do a deal. They could draw and both go through. The only thing is, and this was mentioned much in commentary, the only thing is, though, that whoever finishes second will probably be facing Argentina from Group B, so there's not much communality of
interest.
Mm. Yeah, of interest, that's it, yeah. Now, at the game tonight at Polokwane was Niren Tulsi, World Cup correspondent of Mail and Guardian newspaper in Johannesburg. And Niren, first off, with South Africa, you must be looking forward to facing France after that.
Oh, damn straight. I think, I mean, France has been incoherent for a long time now, and I think after today as well, yeah. Especially with the players looking so dejected after the match.
They certainly did. Speaking of dejection, what was the mood like today around South Africa? Was it very deflated after the defeat to Uruguay?
I think there was a sense of deflation. Well, I think there is. I mean, the country was pretty quiet today. not so many vuvuzelas sort of blaring in the background while you're trying to work or sleep. But I think it's going to pick up again slowly as the messaging comes through from the team that they're still in the tournament, or they believe they're still in the tournament.
Okay, what did you make of Mexico? What was it like there at the stadium tonight?
I mean, it was phenomenal. I think there were about 3,000 Mexican fans here, and they really got behind the team. And Mexico, I mean, they play really, really beautiful attacking football sometimes, you know, sort of like football angels on tequila. lots of creative passing, little lobs and chips and things. And they really play the game, I think, the way it should be played, yeah.
Listen, Niran, if things don't work out for South Africa and they go out at the group stage, what happens then? Does South Africa lose interest? Does the party continue? Do you get behind other nations? What?
Well, I think the party is going to continue. I mean, we've been looking forward to this particular party for a long time. And there was a little study done just prior to the World Cup, and I think a lot of South Africans sort of seem to be backing Brazil as their second team, but also really getting behind the other African teams. Like, for example, I was at Loftus for Ghana-Serbia, and it was really phenomenal to see the South African supporters getting behind the Black Stars, yeah.
Okay. Listen, kind of last thing. It's been talked about a lot, this tournament, in England and probably in other countries as well, as being a great big nationwide party. Even people talking about it being a watershed for South Africa, a key to a permanent change of some level in the country. Is that all an exaggeration, or is that actually a feeling that some threshold has been crossed with this?
Well, look, I mean, I think, on one level, it is one big party or jaw, as you like to say. But when it comes to sort of suggesting that a month-long sporting tournament can have some sort of lasting or profound effect on national unity and racial reconciliation in this country, then I get a little cynical. I think, it's the mood is ephemeral. It doesn't last for forever. We've got to work really hard and sort of in trying to harness whatever goodwill that does come out of this tournament and hopefully sort of move forward from there. I mean, a typical example was, people were going on about 1995 and the unifying effects of the Rugby World Cup, but you look at what happened a few months before this World Cup. An obsolete, irrelevant right-winger gets murdered by black people, and suddenly the entire country is racially polarized, which means that we still have a lot of issues to deal with. Whether a World Cup or a sporting event can do that in a month, I seriously doubt it. Yeah, I think we just have lots of hard work to do.
All right, Niran, and on and off the pitch, many, many best wishes and best of luck against the French.
Thanks so much. Well, look, I'm looking for revenge. I was in Marseille in 98, and not only did we lose 3-0, but I also got sort of skinned for a six-pack of beer. I think I paid €50 for it. So I'm looking for revenge.
My word, and the Irish think they've been treated badly. Niran, that's a terrifying story, and very best of luck, as I say.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson. Just like being in South Africa.
Now, excellent stuff. Earlier on Thursday, an absolutely terrific performance, as we mentioned earlier, from Argentina. 4-1 the scoreline against the rather fancied South Koreans. And they just looked like they were having a terrific time, didn't they, Argentina? All those little fellas buzzing around, a pass in and a flick into one another.
Yeah, and working hard as well.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Tevez, he was like a little bull on the left wing. And then Messi was getting stuck in as well. There was actually a good
Aguero
work ethic too,
as well.
Yeah, he came on. I mean, just because he's related to Maradona now, I think, more so than anything else.
Wow, when he came on, it really re-kick-started the game. Because the South Korea's fortuitous goal had taken a little bit of the wind out of Argentina's sails, but then they were all off again, scoring goals. And as I say, looking like they're having a wonderful time.
Yeah, they scored a lot of goals, but you'll see that Higuain was in acres of space for every one of the three goals he scored. I don't know whether he's got a rotten kipper down his shorts or something, which keeps the other defenders away, but he was in acres. And the goalkeeper, the first one, he just flopped down like a salmon himself and let it in. So
right.
Yeah, so he wasn't... I mean, he played well, and he was Johnny on the spot, and he was in the right place to put the ball away, but there was nobody near him on any of the goals.
Right, okay. So do you think that maybe South Korea weren't all that?
Yeah, they weren't all that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I would summarise it.
Maradona, though, isn't he looking terrific?
He's looking, I was thinking sort of Danny DeVito like in his body shape.
Scarier than that, I think.
And, well, not so much the face, but right. Looking a bit further down. And it just occurred to me that, you know, what would he have possibly looked like if he hadn't had his stomach stapled? Quite a frightening thought. But he looks, it's fabulous to watch him, and he's a complete breath of fresh air in this World Cup.
Yeah.
A lot of the managers are, you know, we've got a lot of very serious, very experienced guys. And for Maradona to come in and sort of break up the rule book and do it his own way and do it with the kind of love that is so evident and made for such a brilliant little cameo when he was asked in the press conference about how much affection he has for his players, and he felt obliged to confirm his macho manhood by talking about his blonde 31-year-old girlfriend and how he really wasn't that way inclined. He had, you know, to make sure we all knew that.
Right.
I think there was a bit of a misunderstanding. He was asked about the kind of sense of love he had for his
players.
Well,
after asking the entire press corps to suck him off, there could be one or two. Dogman Star says, as a Liverpool fan, I would absolutely love it if Diego Armando was to be our manager next season. Sure, we could have cuddly old Uncle Roy with his earnest but dull interviews, or we could have crazy old Diego grabbing his nether regions while shouting abuse at Sam Allardyce and generally losing the run of himself. Snoop John D, similar theme. I'd love to see what Diego would make of Fergie's attempts at mind games. That would be a duel and a half.
I'd take multiple relegations to have Maradona in charge of my team. I mean, he's just such great value for money. And he's, like you say, him and his team, they're just having such a great time here. When he was appointed, people thought the Argentinian FA were insane. But one lone voice in this podcast said, well, hold on, he might actually be good.
Was it Marcelo, was it?
No, it was me.
John Ashdown's not around.
It was me.
I think what's interesting is that in English football culture, there's obviously been an attempt to demonise Maradona for years and years and years. And yet, I think if you did a straw poll around most English football supporting folk now, he'd be very popular.
Mm. Saying all this, though, today, the defending wasn't very good.
Yeah.
They won 4-1. De Michaelis looked like a ship when he was turning and got done by the South Korean. He went through and popped it in. And then the two fullbacks. I mean, Gutierrez played in the Championship last year, and he's hopelessly out of position at all times. As soon as they come up against a team with a decent winger, I can see him getting skinned on that side. And Heinze, on the other side, his knees creak when he runs these days.
Well, yeah, I thought Heinze was having a good tournament, but I would take your point about Gutierrez, who is suspended for the final group game. I just wonder, are all your metaphors aquatic?
Yeah. Like Steve Zissou.
Mm. Well, the final group game for Argentina is against Greece, which you would have said wasn't going to be very tight, except that today Greece took the history book and turned it on its head and then threw it out of the window.
I'd say that was probably more Nigeria's doing.
No,
than
Amy.
Oh, come
but
on.
This was the game that you thought, well, that I can go make a cup of tea during that one. But lo and behold, if it didn't turn out to be a bit of a thriller.
You could go and make a casserole.
Yeah, right. A couple of headlines. Ian Symes says, headline suggestion, Greece score in World Cup, I shit you not. And Butters 11, 10-man Nigeria come Acropolis. Yeah, there you go. The red card is what sparked it all off. Hey, that ridiculous red card for Keita.
Yeah, it was just so daft. I mean, yeah.
What did
you
do, Amy?
If you were Nigeria, well, he sort of aimed a pathetic fresh air kick at his opponent. It was a bit of something and nothing, really, and I'm not even sure there was much contact. But it was
just
more
the most of it, and that just it was horrible.
You can't stuck his studs out at somebody's knee on the touchline over a throw in.
I know. It's I don't know. It's just disappointing on both sides. Yeah.
You're right.
I would blame Lars Lagerbäck for that, the Nigerian manager, for that sending off in a way. Sadi Keita was playing out of position and playing very badly. And I suspect that may have led to the frustration, which led him to kick out petulantly and get that stupid red card. But Costas Saranis, who was on the receiving end of his very light cuff, he went down and very much made a meal of it. But desperate times called for desperate measures. I'd have done the same.
He went down like the Greek, stock exchange? Okay, Group B now stands thusly. Argentina 6 points, South Korea 3 points, and Greece also on 3 points, and then Nigeria on nil. So South Korea play Nigeria and Argentina play Greece. And it's, you know, they could get out of the group. Madness. Because that's the thing. When that red card happened, and OK, they were playing against only 10 men, suddenly, a switch flicked. They had more shots in that game than any other team has managed in the World Cup so far. Greece. 11 shots. Amazing. Amazing.
And one of the players of the tournament so far handed them victory because the Nigerian goalkeeper, Vincent Enyema, had a rick. Not quite as bad as some of the ones we've seen already, but it was very much his fault. The goal, which was unfortunate, because apart from that mistake, he had another fantastic performance today.
Well, that was Thursday then, and very exciting it proved. Friday holds diverse delights for us, including the return of Germany, who thrilled us so much in their opening defeat of Australia. They're taking on Serbia this time around. Shall we dial up Raphael Honigstein to get him to say Mesut Özil, because that's what the listeners want. Raphael, who is the number 10 for Germany?
Mesut Özil.
Oh, fantastic stuff. You were right, listeners. That is special. Listen, is it all going to be a bit of a flash in the pan, this incredible Mannschaft performance against the Australians, or are Serbia in for a bit of a hiding tomorrow, Raphael?
Germany usually don't do flash-in-the-pan stuff. They're either pretty good or hopelessly bad and crush out in the first round. And, of course, in the World Cup, they usually, even with a bad team, go quite far. So I don't think they're going to have too many problems with Serbia. It's not going to be as easy as against the Aussies, but I'm fairly optimistic.
All right. And this certainly doesn't look like a bad team, does it? I read your excellent article on an alternative website pointing out that not only is it the country's youngest side since 1934, but also the most multicultural.
Yes, it is. Nearly half the squad could have turned out for another country. And it is no coincidence that this is, A, as you said, a young squad, but also a multicultural squad, because just about 10 years ago, so exactly at the time when most of these players would have come into the important years of their early careers, their formative years, the German FA made two big decisions. One was to, or Germany made two big decisions, I should say. One was to liberalize the citizenship laws that allowed people with migratory background easier access to citizenship. And at the same time, the German FA, after years of neglect, decided to spend heavily into youth education programs, and it's paid off.
How are you getting on out there, Rafa? Is it good fun?
It is good fun, but it's a bit weird because you don't really feel that there is a World Cup going on unless South Africa themselves play. You don't really see any fans, not where I'm staying anyway, in Pretoria. It's a bit strange like that. I mean, you go to a shop, you go to a restaurant, and you don't get any sense that that anything's happening. The TV's on, but the game might as well be on the other side of the planet. So it's a strange one, but I'm enjoying the fact that, A, I think the games are getting better, and B, it's a very, very interesting country. I haven't seen that much of it, but what I've seen is really amazing, and I must say I was a little bit apprehensive going out here first, but very much positively surprised.
Raphael, you said before that the whole kind of Anglo-German rivalry thing was a rivalry that really only existed in Anglo heads. But I was just wondering, with Franz Beckenbauer's less than complimentary remarks about England's opening performance and the fact that that brick-by-brick reconstruction of Rob Green's Howler, as commissioned by The Guardian, has been a massive online success in Germany, is the whole country kind of getting together and sniggering at the English? Are you feeling the rivalry a bit more these days?
You feel the sniggering a bit more these days, but that's because of that's a function of England has how England has played, and there was a similar reaction in 2008. Of course, I'm not sure it's really born out of a massive rivalry. I think there is a sense that in Germany more people are aware that that the English find Germany for some reason to be their biggest rival, and then when something does happen, it's sort of a counter reaction, but. You know, Beckenbauer, I mean, the idea that he's saying this because he somehow wants to get under the skin of the English or sees them as some sort of rival or possible opponent in the last 16 is completely ludicrous. I mean, you talk to him for 5 minutes and he'll say all sorts of stuff about anyone and any team in the world. And he'll genuinely believe it for about 10 minutes and then change his opinion completely.
I know people like that.
Exactly different 10 minutes later. So you can say that there is something brewing. The Verbers are starting, but it's not born out of a genuine sense of rivalry, at least not from our side, I can assure you.
Soft, strong and very, very long. This is World Cup Daily with James Richardson.
Right. Also, coming up on Friday, Slovenia, the smallest nation in this World Cup, taking on the United States, the biggest nation in this World Cup. And Slovenia, the surprise, group leaders. Isn't that interesting? The Americans, of course, secured the greatest shock draw history victory win, whatever it was called, in the history of these World Cup finals with that 1-1 against England. But they still could be on the verge of an early exit if they don't get a result against Slovenia. Now, meantime, on Friday night at the Greenpoint Stadium in Cape Town, England take on Algeria. The atmosphere already building there by the seaside in Senegal, Cape Town, as Owen Gibson's been finding out.
So we're here on Cape Town's waterfront district, which is a really sort of picture postcard location. The sun's out, fans of all kinds milling around, watching the action on big screens, having a drink, having something to eat. Lots of fans seem to have based themselves here for the duration of the tournament. Obviously, Cape Town's a popular tourist destination in any case. And we've got not only England fans, but a fairly sizable contingent of Algerian fans here.
1, 2, 3, Viva l'Algérie! 1, 2, 3.
Cape Town is very, very wonderful town, and it's very beautiful. It's very beautiful, and it's Africa. It's our soul. We are Algerian. It's our soul. We want to enjoy.
If Boudebouz will play Ziani, those two players tomorrow is their chance. The game of their life. I mean, the goalkeeper, I don't know what to say. I mean, he's good, okay? He's good when it's tough to get the ball. And he's very bad when it's easy.
So not only does this seem to be the World Cup capital for lots of England fans, but it also seems to be the junkets capital for politicians and royalty who are out here ostensibly to promote England's 2018 World Cup bid and also to get behind the team. Prince William and Prince Harry will be at the game tomorrow night. Boris Johnson was here earlier today. So I've just walked past the Dublin Irish bar, front of the big screen here. We've got the obligatory Grimsby Town flags, Spurs flags. Let's go in and talk to a few England fans.
Oh, South Africa's been brilliant. I mean, Joburg, come down here. The people have gone that out the way. All the negative press back home and what people have been scared of, it's all wrong. It's been brilliant.
Absolutely amazing. One of the best places I've been having the time of my life.
You didn't have a clue. Fabio Capello. We love you!
So I've just come out of the rather calmer, slightly more serene, but still very pressured environs of the England press conference where Fabio Capello and Steven Gerrard faced the master acts of the world's media. Fabio Capello, as ever, not giving very much away. He called for no mistakes, which is telling in the aftermath of Saturday's game. And rather worryingly, in the open training session that preceded the press conference, Robert Green did make one or two other fumbles of the ball with it as it bounced just in front of him. Capello also had a bit of a go at the ball again, complaining about the way that it behaved. But Steven Gerrard said the team had to put all that behind them and just get on and win the match.
Was that Life is Life in the background of that Algeria?
What was that Life is Life? Oh, fantastic. I wonder if it was the... was it the lie-back version? Did you ever see that? The kind of Slovakian, I think, they were neo-Nazis. It was tremendous. Producer Ben, you know what I'm talking about. Really, go and Google Life is Life, right? Which was obviously a Euro-disco classic from the 80s, yeah? But then I think they were either Slovenian or Slovakian. It's so hard to tell. This strange group called Lieback did this bare-chested... kind of funereal march of the same song. I urge you, listeners, check it out on YouTube.
Jimbo, remember how much trouble you got in with the whole, what's his name, Croatia manager?
Oh, that.
Slaven Bilic.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't...
Don't go there.
I don't condone their neo-Nazism, if indeed they are, but I think they actually were.
Sorry, on a Life is Life theme.
Yes,
If anybody wants to look up the footage of Maradona dancing with the football when he's warming up for a Napoli game to the theme of Life is Life as it's on the PA system in the ground, it's absolutely priceless.
Brilliant. Life is Life then, listeners? First thing I do when I get home tonight. Now, meantime, tomorrow England are playing Algeria, that's right. Lots of questions about England. Is Gareth Bale going to be playing? Is Carragher coming in for King? How come Wayne Rooney hasn't scored or laid on a goal for England at a tournament since the Euro 2004 group stages? Is that right? Barney Roney tweeted that today, really? So it must be. Ah. It's official.
I know Fabio Capello started taking to calling Gareth Barry Gary Barry instead, which sounds like a character from a Shane Meadows film.
It does, yeah. Doesn't it? Yeah. Would you keep... I'm obliged to ask, although this is going to be the question that everyone's saying in the next 24 hours, would you play Rob Green in goal, Amy?
I just thought it was interesting in The Guardian this morning that they'd asked the four main correspondents who are following England exactly that, and there was... you know, selections for each of the goalkeepers. So that just shows how uncertain everybody is.
Yeah.
The thing I can't understand is that the main reason everyone seems to have for not picking Joe Hart is inexperience. If he's good enough, surely play him. I mean, he's a goalkeeper. That's all he's done since he was, I don't know, whatever, 15, 4, 12 years old, played in goals, surely. And am I correct in thinking that the man who you love most in the world, Gigi Buffon, made his Italy debut and played an absolute blinder at a very young age against Russia.
It was in Moscow. It's funny, there was a discussion today, possibly, was it, on the World Cup today, that Sean Ingle blog thing about the coldest game you've ever been to. That was mine. Minus 15 it was at the Lokomotiv Moscow stadium when he came on. And I hope I'm not wrong about this. I think he was 18. He came on during that game. He was subbed on for, I'm not sure if the goalkeeper got injured. I think it was Sebastiano Rossi. And he held Russia. I believe he also saved the penalty. Good God, what's there not to love about Gigi Buffon?
He's snood.
Oh, come on.
And Iker Casillas, he's been in goal for Spain since he was about 12.
But I don't love him. Oh, Greg.
Yeah, I know Owen was mentioning something about Rob Green making another fumble today.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a picture on the website at the moment, the sport blog picture of the day, which Tom Jenkins took. And he's got Rob Green curling his arms up as if he's holding an invisible ball. And the ball's behind him, and he's done exactly the same thing as what he did in the match against the USA. Now, I don't know whether he might have had 100 shots rattled in inside 20 minutes, and that's one fumble that he's made. But it doesn't look good anyway. And I don't know whether Fabio Capello will be influenced by just one mistake in training, or whether all the other goalkeepers make the same amount of mistakes.
Well, that's the thing. You know, not just a question of Rob Green. It's what are the others like? Because David James, hardly a guarantee. And there does seem to be this stigma about lack of experience with Joe Hart.
But the word from inside the camp appears to be that Green will start again.
Yeah, interesting. Algeria, 24 years waiting, and a desperately awful start. We mentioned it before, the 1-0 defeat to Slovenia. They're promising to make amends against England. The manager saying, we have nothing to lose and everything to win. They have come up with surprise results before. Obviously, the defeat of Egypt just to get here. So Wayne Rooney
England
said
should
it,
beat them and beat them easily.
That's what Wayne Rooney said. Even if we're not playing our best, we can beat Algeria.
They should. Algeria are a poor side, but they're not a pub team. They're probably going to attack down the left wing.
Yeah, they've got a decent left winger. That's what I saw against Slovenia.
England's weakest link is probably Glenn Johnson. Isn't the world's greatest defender. He's good going forward and not so good defending, as everyone knows and says. So they've Belhaj and Ziani down the left, Algeria have. And I'd imagine that's how they'll go, but they're pretty toothless up front. Their goalkeeper, who is a liability, looks like he'll be injured, so they'll have to bring in his understudy.
It's a shame. It could be an interesting duel.
Who would be the worst? But if England don't win that and win quite comfortably, then they're in big, big trouble.
Yeah.
Well, the pattern of this World Cup has been that after some sort of cagey-ish first games, that people are beginning to express themselves more in the second games. So I think the onus is on England not only to win, to obviously improve their position in terms of qualifying, but I think they've got to somehow show a new face, really, in the way that some of the other teams are saying, OK, this is what we're about, this is what we're going to be trying to do in this tournament. So people will be looking to England to see if they can actually show what they're made of, as well as just get points.
They need that new face to be Gary Barry. He needs to come back and show himself to the fullback, and not in that way. Show himself to the fullback and actually, get the ball off him. Whereas Steven Gerrard and Lampard just run away. If you look at England's fullbacks, big problem is they get the ball and they need a midfielder to come, show themselves, get the ball off them, and get them passing the ball going forwards. And that just doesn't happen. It didn't happen against USA. You know, they need Barry to actually get the ball, turn and pass it on the floor and get them moving forward. Otherwise, you just lump it up the wing and the possession's lost.
Mm. Very good. All right, well, the game coming up tomorrow evening. Now, tomorrow's podcast, and good Lord, if this isn't exciting, is going to be recorded in front of a live and quite possibly inebriated audience. It says
live,
here.
Inebriated and angry mob.
Yeah, at Guardian HQ. Straight after the game, or ish, anyone wearing an I Belong to Jimbo t-shirt gets a kiss from Barry. There you go. And so that's something to look forward to. Not sure if you're one of those lucky listeners who has a ticket to that hottest of events. But if not,
Mrs. Baz was making noises about coming along, and she doesn't have a ticket. Will she get in?
Yeah, she will. Yeah,
we're right.
If she wears an I Love Jimbo t-shirt,
I'll put her name on the door.
I think she was thinking of getting an I Belong to Baz t-shirt.
Really?
Yeah.
Can she get a Goals Are Overrated t-shirt? Anyway, if you aren't one of the lucky ones who I'll be putting down on the door, then don't worry, because you can still hear the whole thing at more or less the same time tomorrow evening.
With added canned laughter and ooze of appreciation.
Yes, all that sort of stuff. Good. In the meantime, many, many thanks, Amy, for being with us this evening. Greg Ruffley,
I've loved it.
And to you, Barry Glendinning,
I've loved it more.
Right. And producer Ben, many thanks to you and you, the listener. Look forward to seeing some of you tomorrow. And to all of you, we'll speak to you tomorrow. Bye-bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.